Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Elise Klink Show, live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. Our number, lines are wide open, 404-872-0750. We are rebuilding America one house at a time. Let's start with yours today, especially if you're in the Northeast listening in and digging out of all kinds of craziness. 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. That is the website. Make sure you sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Follow me on Twitter. If you're not following me, you're missing half the conversation, of course. My son Alex is out in Massachusetts, in Andover, Massachusetts, to be specific, where they got about 2 feet of snow. And the, this is sort of funny, the headmaster of the school that he goes to, or the principal, whatever, said, sent out a note to all the kids and said, whatever you do, there will be no jumping out of windows into snowbanks. And so I said to Alex, whatever you do, don't jump out of a window. Like, that just seems so crazy you would have to tell kids that. And he said, oh, Mom, windows wouldn't be tall enough. We're looking for a roof. Da-dum-bum. But jumping off a roof is actually not a bad metaphor for what happened in the housing crisis. And I'm going to seg all the way over to what happened this week with the credit rating companies and how Standard & Poor's got notice that the Justice Department had filed a civil suit. And it is one of the two biggest credit rating agencies, one that was so central to what was going on with the housing crisis that everybody now, 6 years later, is sort of saying, are you kidding me? It took this long to put together a civil case? Now, apparently, there are still some prosecutors that are looking at criminal action against Standard & Poor's, S&P, and some of the other credit rating agencies. But do you understand how this all worked? It's so interesting. It's such a piece from the past. And, you know, I just feel like we have to take a moment, because if these guys hadn't been driving so hard for profits and instead had taken a step back and actually looked objectively at what they were rating as A instead of the junk that it was, we may never have gone down this path. That's what the stakes were. So how does it work? Well, you go get a mortgage and you're graded A or A minus or B or maybe you're a C, who knows. But let's say most people are A's and A minuses. And you go and you get a loan, and then the company that you get it from, right, usually let's say it's Bank of America or Chase or it's some local mortgage broker, they resell it to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Typically, this is how this has worked. Or a bunch of other companies that kind of sprung up to make money from this in the early 2000s. Okay. So now they buy a bunch of these loans and they package them together and they go resell them to places like, oh, say, Iceland or teachers' pensions or whatever it is. And they think that they're buying grade A stuff. You know why? Because companies like Standard & Poor's says, this is grade A. This is the best stuff. These people are always going to pay their mortgage payments and you're never going to have a problem. So, you know, teacher pensions, things that have to be really, really secure, things that you need to be able to depend on to provide an income for millions of Americans who have paid into these pension funds. So they buy these loans, and what happens? Turns out that that grade A loan was actually like a D minus. All this junk that was sold, the subprime junk, was sold with the blessing, the ratings blessing of S&P and others like it. And so everybody thought they were buying better quality mortgages than they actually were. And so when the bottom fell out, everybody was surprised. Okay, so how does it work when you take a step back? Well, ratings agencies are there to sort of be the independent voice. Well, hello, they're also selling the information right back to the companies that are hiring them to be independent. It's not really so independent, is it? And so pursuing money, profits, Wall Street, and Wall Street's blessings, they just ignored their own math. The math was there. They just ignored it because it didn't serve their interest. Now, they deny that's what it is. They deny that they were anything other than objective about the mathematical analysis that they were making, and they didn't care, they are saying, more about generating revenue, and they are prepared to go to trial to fight that allegation. Well, of course, it's their lifeline. This is like cutting off the blood. But so many people have been disappointed in S&P and Moody's Investor Services, which are the big ratings agencies that are supposed to be there to assess the credit worthiness of bonds. And up until now, you could argue that they were at the heart of the crisis and they escaped culpability. And these companies are still rating thousands and thousands and thousands of bonds. They still hold sway in the securities markets. They still have all the profits. During 2005 and 2006, according to the New York Times, Moody's made $238 million by rating complex mortgage instruments. The investors who invested in those bonds lost billions, with a B, billions of dollars. So credit rating agencies are important, and they really want to make money. And at the same time, we're all at their mercy, and it's really scary. So Justice actually putting together enough pieces to file a civil, not criminal suit. Civil suit is really interesting. And what's going to happen is going to determine our ability to rely on the ratings. And if we can't rely on the ratings, how do we know what's really in these packages? How do pension firms like TIAA CREF, how do they know what's in the packages of mortgages? How does the government know what it's buying? There are people who say that all of the loans, or many of the loans, that the government has bought in the wake of the crisis is just going to fall over on itself. Already, there are, I mean, it's true. FHA is experiencing record high defaults. Well, in some ways, that's what it's there for. It stepped up when nobody else would make mortgages and tried to keep the mortgage market going. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in bankruptcy, now making money again. It could take 25 years before they could buy their way out of bankruptcy. All of them still, for every mortgage that's done, depending on rating agencies to know what's in those mortgages. And when you're willing to turn a blind eye to the math, that's a problem. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Let's go to the phones. Elizabeth joins us on the line. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What can I do for you?
I'm living in a deteriorating 90-year-old house in a desirable neighborhood, and I'm thinking about, rather than selling it, which I had planned to do 5 to 6 years from now, about trying to find someone who would do an exchange. I had a similar offer from a developer about 20 years ago, but was not ready to do that. And so I'm wondering about the tax and legal and any other complications or requirements that would kick in should I find an interested party.
So let's talk a little bit about that. What is your intention here? What do you want to do and why?
The reason I need to do it is I've suddenly inherited responsibility for a family member with a disability, so I need to find a place that's you know, not deteriorating. Number two, I'm not ready. Well, I'm frightened at my age and because of the economy to just simply sell and then buy a new home and put a lot of my equity into a down payment and then incur debt and interest all over again. My current mortgage is, I'm into it 23 years.
How much is your house worth, do you think?
I think it's a tear down. I think the land is worth a minimum of $600,000 after, mm-hmm. and then I owe on my mortgage about $90,000.
So why are you okay, so let's tackle this a couple of pieces at a time. What makes you think that you couldn't find an adequate house for $500,000?
I could, but I don't want to take on a new mortgage.
But you wouldn't, because if you have $600,000, you'd pay some taxes on that, unless you're married, and you owe $90,000, so that would leave about $510,000. So you'd have $510,000 in cash just from selling your house. What you're doing is freeing the equity.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't have a mortgage because you would just buy something that would be $400,000 or $500,000.
But I need the equity to fund my retirement.
Okay, which you wouldn't have anyway even if you stay in this house. So if you just trade house for house, you're not any further ahead.
Well, but I see this as a temporary measure in that 5 to 6 years from now, when I'm ready to retire, I was going to sell the home, tap into the equity, and fund my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I just cannot do that right now. I need to keep working. I own a business. My family member relies on local services in my community.
Mm-hmm.
So,
why don't you rent?
I have thought of that. Friends of mine who lost money in the housing crisis decided not to buy again. They decided to rent.
Well, you live in a part of the country. You're calling from Arlington, Virginia?
Yeah.
Where a lot of property stayed about where it was or came down a little bit.
That's people correct.
People who bought at the wrong time bought at the wrong time. But you've lived in that house for a really long time.
Yes.
So you've made good money here. So,
yes.
But if you need that cash, so you are here, Elizabeth. I'm just going to say this, and I don't mean this to be mean, but I think you're overly complicating your life. Exchanging property is only going to be a terrible thing for you.
Okay, that's what I need to hear, why that is.
Well, let me tell you, to start out with, if you're single and you sell, it's treated as a sale, not an exchange, unless this is an investment property. This is a sale of a personal residence. When you exchange it, it doesn't matter that you're getting something else. You're selling. So now you're going to owe taxes. So out of your pocket, you're going to have to come up with, let's say, $50,000 or $70,000. But you're in this new place that you've exchanged for, and you're going to have to get a new mortgage anyway, because unless they have an FHA loan, which they probably don't, you're not going to be able to take over somebody else's loan. So you're going to have to go through all of these steps.
I was assuming, and here was my thought, is there some large real estate, local real estate firms that have been in the area forever, and I was going to target one of them with the understanding that they would have possibly have some inventory that they own.
Let me stop you, Elizabeth. It's not going to happen. This isn't going to work. You have to sell this house and go rent if you want to use all this money. Cash out now and do it. And that's fine. I think that'll work just perfectly. But you can't be afraid to dig into the process. You think you're making it easier? I am telling you, you're complicating your life by triple. Don't do this. Sell your home and then consider the next step. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Klink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. We've got Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So there's a lot of talk about how the market's been heating up. Last week we talked to a whole bunch of people, and they talked to us about how these things were, you know, getting stronger and prices are going up. And yet it may be time to lower your house price, but yet, how do you really know? When do you break the bad news?
Well, I think you have a strategic plan going in, okay? So what we do is we coach our sellers on, here is one strategic method that won't let you down. And it doesn't mean they have to employ it, but it's nice to know that you have a game plan going forward. After the sixth showing, or 30 days of no showing, lower the price. And I say lower it about 2%. Be careful about where you're lowering it. You still want to be in the big round numbers that search well and get all the eyes on the internet. In other words, you don't want to lower it to 249.9. You want to be at 250 straight up. But lowering the price in a strategic method like that gives method to the madness, right? Because selling a home is very emotional. Not very many people would sign up and say, oh, selling a house is a blast, you know? So I think giving yourself a strategic plan, six showings, 30 days of no showings, lower the price, I think that gives measure to the, again, madness.
Do you set expectations? This has really been anything but a seller's market the last 6 years. It's been very, very tough. Sellers have become emotionally destroyed as the value of their home has disappeared. How do you prep sellers for this?
Well, the good news is people are getting a lot of activity right now. The inventory is so low in Atlanta compared to years prior that it has just really revived the hope of these sellers. And people call us all the time and say, gosh, we had four houses in our neighborhood. They're all sold.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's been something that people are experiencing and seeing for themselves. But when you start to get that traffic but the buyers aren't interested, again, that's just when it's nice to know that you can have a plan. You don't have to do it at six showings, but let's say you set yours at seven. At least you have a plan.
Do you feel that homeowners are still unrealistic about sales price?
Not really.
No, they've been around it. They've been watching what's going on.
They have been, and really, truly, it is an owner's right to get what they want. So if they're not in a hurry and they want to sit on the market for 2 or 3 years to get what they want, you know, hey, you never can tell.
You might just get it.
Well, how are we ever going to establish high prices if somebody doesn't get it?
I guess that's true.
Right?
Rhonda, you've got more of this on your blog, right?
Of course. RhondaDuffy.com.
So check it out, everybody. This has been Real Estate Insight. I'm Elise Glenk. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, it's 11:35 on the Elise Glenk Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. We're going to start with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online, the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at Glink. And starting to have some good conversations there. I'll be tweeting a little bit later on in the show. We're going to talk in just a few minutes about how FHA just announced this week a new rise in the cost of FHA mortgages. It is going to cost you more. And we'll talk about why coming up in just a moment, and I'll tell you how much more. Shocking. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Chris joins us on the line. Hey, Chris.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Before my question here, I just want to preface this that my girlfriend and I just bought a house last July, and we got a great deal. There are a lot of great deals out there to be had right now. If you have the money, this is the time to buy. You know, I do residential rehab on homes like this as well. So, but the problem that we saw when we were looking around, we had a good couple of months to look into it before we had to do anything, but we ran across a lot of, for lack of a better phrase, there was a lot of trash out there, you know, before we found something that we thought.
Well, what do you mean by trash, which is so interesting, because you normally you hear about stories about how these houses have been trashed, where they've been stripped of their appliances, in some cases stripped of copper plumbing.
Yeah, not necessarily that bad or that devastating, but if you have somebody that was under the foreclosed note and they get to sit in the house for a couple of years, they're not going to put any money into it whatsoever. They're going to save their money to go someplace else to rent somewhere, wherever the case is. So there's, you know, a lot of, you know, either floor damage, wall damage, you know, roofing that needed issues, leaks in basements, siding issues, broken windows, just, you know, a lot of wear and tear that needed to be, you know, taking place when it occurred, as opposed to letting
Right, deferred maintenance. Really deferred maintenance, right? Stuff goes wrong in a house, and if you don't fix it, it just gets worse.
Exactly. And so that's what I meant by that. But we found a great move-in type of house, and we got a great deal. But my question to you is, I really do not know if the housing market is really on the upswing like everybody says. And the reason I say that is that, you know, over the last few years, there have been a lot of groups that have pooled together money to buy massive amounts of houses with a theory of renting them out. You've got a lot of foreign investors that have gone into different areas and have bought a number of houses and everything because the U.S. dollar has decreased in value with the QE 1, 2, and now infinite 3. The gold price doubled practically over the last several years. The stock market...
And has fallen.
It has.
Fallen a lot, 25%.
Yeah, it has, but it's kind of plateaued off the rush, you know what I mean? The buying rush, and then it's kind of plateaued off. The stock market has pretty much done very similar, you know, gone up back to where it was, but the inconsistent part is the U.S. dollar. And that's what I'm wondering is if the stock market's doubled, the price of the gold is basically doubled, but the residential real estate market has only gone up maybe 5 or 6%. You know, have we really plateaued off? And the other sidebar of that is the unemployment figures. Because when you look at the participation rate in the economy, it's at an all-time low as far as, you know, people out there working and everything. And without employment, you can't really buy a house. You know what I mean?
Chris, you are singing to the preaching to the choir because this is the kind of stuff I talk about week in and week out. I've been concerned about the unemployment rate and the participation rate, which is as low as it's been since the early 80s now.
Right.
And the actual amount of wages. Stock market, I don't even understand why it's as high as it is, given...
There's a lot of cheerleading going on.
There is a lot. Everybody wants to feel good, right? Everybody, we're so used to feeling good about things.
I'm really tired of watching CNBC and those guys. Everything seems to me like it's a lot of cheerleading going on, and it's really, there's no basis of fundamentals here.
Well, I love that you say that because there's actually a business philosophy where I call it blame the journalists, where I get this, and I get this all the time. It's like, well, if you and the media would stop being so negative all the time, life would be better for all of us.
Right.
And I'm like, really? That's not what the math says.
Well, but that goes back to your first thought about the Standard & Poor's, the interest rates and
the ratings agencies, the S&P.
What's kind of ironic about all of that is that if Holder's going after them based on faulty ratings, then what's the U.S. government's rating really? You know, what's the real rating of the U.S. government if that's the case?
Well, they've actually been on the verge of lowering it now for a while. So let's dig in for a sec. Take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my feeling is that we could be, and I have talked about this. I've said from the very beginning, I think we're facing another recession. I don't think it's as long and deep as the one that we had in 2009, which for most Americans isn't over yet, which is why you see all these houses out there. But if you look at real estate, and I think you're right on the money when you talk about sort of big hedge fund money coming in and private equity money, and they're scooping up all these properties and they're going to rent them out, that kind of money eventually, and not in the too distant future, wants a payout.
Exactly.
They want their money back. And the only way they're going to get their money back is by unloading all these houses to somebody else or some other company that wants to manage them for a long period of time. That is when you could see another dip. And that's if we don't get a recession. But that could be another dip in housing prices. But if we end up in another recession, there are millions of Americans who are barely making it now who could get plunged over the edge, and then all of those homes will go into foreclosure.
Exactly, because the one point that you just touched upon are these large entities are coming in and buying these homes, which is a good idea, and, you know, buying low and selling high, but the maintenance and the upkeep of those homes... You know, they might have the world's greatest, game plan going into it up front, but 5 years down the road, if they've got a property that really hasn't been maintained that well because they're renting it, you know, what's, like you said, how, when they go to exit out of it, it's going to be another, it's going to be another potential dip.
Yep. Yep. I, Chris, we see eye to eye on a lot of this stuff. Unfortunately, and I'll go back to what I said, you know, we just had a contraction in the economy in the fourth quarter. I'm not convinced that we're not going to have another one this quarter.
Yeah,
because once the government stops spending money the way it's been spending, the rest of the economy has not grown fast enough to make up the difference. And that is where contractions can really hurt. Because
you're right, but that, you know, the shell game that they've got going on right now, because now that they're saying that the trade deficit is much different than what they thought it was, so now the new shell game is that, oh, actually, we weren't in a contraction last quarter, and we're actually in the plus, but we'll figure those numbers out later.
Yeah,
you know,
okay,
what I'm
it's whatever. Like, I'm sort of over that, right? Because it's the same thing that they've been saying about the consumer price index all these years. Well, when they started the CPI, everybody got steak, and now it's ground beef. And pretty soon it's hamburger helper. And so you can just keep changing what people are eating, and one day you're going to end up in a situation where, okay, we're now eating fava beans, but that's the CPI. And, oh, at some point in time, 50 years ago, people used to get steak. When you change the goalposts so that it fits your own story, you are creating fiction around a reality. And in my book, that just doesn't fly. Thanks for your call, Chris. 404-872-0750, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. What do you think about what Chris said? 1-800-WSB-TALK. James joins us on the line from Sandy Springs. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing, Lee?
I'm good. What do you think?
Hey, Lee, I just want to comment on what you were talking about with the S&P and the packaging of the mortgages.
Yeah.
I just want to comment on that. Well, I remember back in, I think it was 2009, or 10, when the guys from S&P and Moody and Fitch, they were actually, you know, testifying before Congress. And there was one question that was asked by the senators to these guys that they all basically had the same line of the response. You know, why would you, you know, send over D-rated paper and then, you know, you get a, you know, you send back, send the paper back rated, you know, a higher rating. And they all had the same response to the senators. You know, it's just our opinion. It's just our opinion.
Yeah, their opinion is, that's fine. They are supposed to be independent observers who are supposed to be using real math formulas to actually look at the quality of things, and then they're supposed to give their opinion. They're paid to give their opinion. The problem is when opinion isn't independent anymore. They're paid for that independent rating, but instead of giving it, they want all of their customers to like them to give them more business rating bonds, and so they, you know, they goose it up. That's the appearance of what they've done. And honestly, even if they didn't do that, the fact that everybody thinks they did it taints the process for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with what I have, that everybody else has with these ratings agencies. How do you trust after a huge violation of trust? If once you put a speck in, right, once you dip your toe into the tar, everybody gets tainted, and all of those ratings, even if 99% of them were fine, if 1% of them were tainted, and they goosed the ratings of them just to get more business, and look at how the economy got destroyed, that's the problem that I have. And so they have to get to a place where we can trust what's happening and what those ratings actually say. Because if we can't trust, the economy can't trust, business can't trust, the European market can't trust, Latin America and China can't trust. It's so much of what happens in this stuff relies on trust. And if you as a bank, you as a credit rating agency, you as a reseller, Fannie and Freddie, if we can't trust you, we can't build a sustainable business model. And that's what this is all about. 404-872-0750, 47 minutes past the hour. Rob joins us on the line from Atlanta. Rob, what do you think? Rob?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I just kind of wanted to agree with you and some of the comments of the other callers about the kind of phoniness of all of the numbers, it seems. The Wall Street Journal, I think a couple weeks ago, published the GDP estimates of quarterly changes in the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And out of 19 quarters since 2008, this is very interesting, 14 out of the 19 quarters, the government overestimated the growth and underestimated the declines.
Oh, that's a surprise.
Yeah.
I saw that. That was great, wasn't it?
And, you know, I'm a little cynical about the government numbers, and obviously I think they want to boost the economy, and they don't want negative vibes out there. So when they do that, you know, that gives people, you know, some confidence in what's going on. And one other point I want to bring up about the questions of the government stats here. S&P top line sales growth, I believe, is down every year since 2008. And if that is true, how do we have any growth in GDP? It's just, I can't connect the two there.
Well,
maybe you can put
the
some
growth
in
GDP, right, the growth in GDP comes from, I think, in large part, the government, right? So we had TARP. We had, if you look at the amount of debt that we've added onto this country since 2008, a lot of it gone to try and boost the economy and keep people employed, right? Because, again, what the disconnect a lot of people have, Rob, is that, oh, we're going to reduce the deficit. Well, that's like millions of jobs. So then you get all those people fired, and then they don't have any money to go buy things. And then we end up supporting them through our programs that they've paid into, right? So unemployment and all the rest.
Okay.
So it's really, we've gotten ourselves into a place where that's not the best use of our cash to leave all these people unemployed. And so what we do is the government puts in money to keep people employed, building roads and bridges and schools. So that's what they should have done. We can discuss that until kingdom come. But so I think the real growth has actually been through government spending. And what we saw in December, and I don't care how the government wants to cook the books, what we saw in December was, when you have a pullback of government spending, the real economy out there is not strong enough to still produce positive growth. So they can say we didn't have a contraction. The government, you know, part of the government says, yes, we had a tenth of a percent contraction, which is small enough to be within the margin of error. But I agree with the Wall Street Journal. My sense of it is that the government overestimated growth, underestimated decline, and the stuff that they did do really wasn't enough to get us where we needed to go. It just wasn't enough. TARP wasn't big enough. It wasn't properly applied. It wasn't applied in places that would have leverage and get more people employed. And it's very unfortunate because we will pass this way again. There's no question about it. I just hope it isn't as deep as the 1920s. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're talking about the economy, and we're rebuilding America one house at a time. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. It's 11:56. We're listening to some Grammy nominees. Tonight is the Grammy show. So we thought we would give you a little taste of what you might be hearing. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Klink Show. We are talking about the economy. We're talking about the deficit. We're really talking about how if you can't trust credit ratings agencies, we are all in really big trouble. Giovanni joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Giovanni, what do you think?
Oh, hello, Beef. I just wanted to tell you, I totally agree with what Chris was discussing with you. He pretty much hit the ball on the head, as did you. This economy is tanking. There's no doubt about it. It's the government is cooking the books. The books are being cooked. We see earnings reports coming out on the stock market, which have some truth to them and have some basis, but we have to realize something. Americans over the past couple of years have increased their productivity at work. And increasing productivity, of course, it has been a great benefit to these large corporations, but the large corporations have not hired back a lot of the people that were laid off.
Right.
So we're seeing a misbalance, really, when we hear this growth. And this is why we still have this high unemployment. I had a very large company for years up north and in Atlanta. And that is really the key to these, like I call it, the rose-colored approach to the New York Stock Exchange. It's, you know. It's
Wait, like, let me put on my rose-colored glasses.
Well, yes, and there are people that are making a lot of money doing it, of course. It does benefit a handful of brokers and high-end traders and volume traders and, you know, program buyers and sellers. But the reality is the economy is in the dunker, and it isn't going to change until things start to change. And the government pumping money in just to make everything look good, to keep everybody smiling, is really probably, it's good for a while, but eventually, you know, we have to pay the piper. And I think we're going to see another recession. There's no doubt about it, in my opinion.
Yeah, oh, no, I think you're exactly right. We are. It is coming down the pike. And, again, I don't know if this sort of contraction of a tenth of a percent is really the tipping point, it's the beginning, or maybe we'll see a little bit more growth because now they're like, oh, we were so close, we're going to make sure that it's 0.1% positive this time. But the point is, we're flat. Whether we're flat to the negative side or flat to the positive side, we're flat, and we really have to understand what's at stake. And it isn't just us. It's Europe. Europe is such a huge driver of this. They're such a huge consumer of our goods. You've got China slowing down. You've got Latin America. There is a real global issue, and we are still on the precipice, and it could all fall over. And we have to be so careful. All right, we're going to continue this conversation to a little bit of news, weather, and traffic, of which there is a lot of rain coming. So we're going to do that now on News Talk WSB.
And you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, where we're rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The ThinkLink community is huge, folks. I want you to take advantage. We have so much free information. It's great information from experts who really know what they're doing. Like at the Equifax Finance blog, where we have tax experts and real estate experts, insurance experts, family money experts, and just huge information that you can get for free at Equifax.com. Just click on the link that says Finance Blog, or I'll tweet something out a little bit later. You can also follow me online. We tweet out all kinds of great information every single day at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And then, of course, there's ThinkLink.com, the big old website that has like 14,000 pages of information, questions just like yours, with answers. Wow, how about that? You actually get answers as well. All of that on thinklink.com. And then, of course, our YouTube channel, Expert Real Estate Tips, has over 350 videos now, I think, including we just shot seven more real estate minutes. So all of those are going to go up this week as well. Lots of really cool stuff. So anyway, check all that out. In the ThinkLink community, sign up for the free weekly newsletter and follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We're talking about the economy and the debt and deficit and how, and this is where it all started for me this week, where S&P, Standard & Poor's, the rating agency, was sued by the federal government, by justice, for caring more. I mean, at the very essence, it was about caring more about their profits than about the instruments they were rating and the independence that everybody relies on them for. That is at the heart of a civil lawsuit from Justice, and we're talking about that today and what that really means for you, because it all ties back to an economy where if we can't trust our biggest financial services organizations, we can't build an economy that works. And we're on the precipice right now. I've been saying for months and months and months, we are going to have another recession. Fourth quarter, we had a contraction in the economy. It was astonishing. People were surprised. The economists seem to always be surprised these days, right? They're just always surprised. They're surprised by the bad unemployment reports, and they're surprised by, you know, a contraction in the economy. What aren't they surprised by? So S&P got sued this week for all the stuff that happened back in 2006, 7, 8, 9. Wow. Just a huge amount. So we're talking about that on the show. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're taking your questions as well. There are all kinds of things going on here that we want to get to. So let's dig in again and answer some questions. Here's some comments. Jerry joins us on the line from Douglasville. Jerry, what do you think? Jerry? Let me try that again. All right, let's try now. Jerry? Jerry?
Hello?
There you go.
Hello?
Sorry, it was a little bit of technical difficulties on my end. What do you think about what's going on?
Denise, thanks for taking my call. And you're a smart lady, I'll tell you. And you're honest and you're telling the truth, and that's what we're not getting so much today is honesty, especially from the ratings and the reports on employment and everything else coming from the government.
Yeah, well, truth is really hard to hear, and I think the government's afraid that if people heard the truth, they wouldn't be so happy.
Yes, but talking about the S&P, I remember that, the suit that the government's suing against them. Didn't the S&P just lower our rating, the government's rating from AAA to AA?
Yeah, I believe that the government has taken a hit in the ratings.
Didn't that might be a little bit of payback for lowering the ratings, huh?
No, I think that S&P actually deserves to have what happened looked at, and I think that that's been pretty well laid out in a bunch of stories in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. I don't think this is payback at all. I think the real question is, why did it take the government 5 years to put this case together?
I was really calling because of the spending, the government spending. You talk about it propping up the economy, and I agree to a certain extent it is, because as a small businessman, I know it's not good. The economy is not good. Sales are not good.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people like myself, being a small business, we're just barely staying in business and just barely holding on.
Right.
And a lot of people are coming around looking for jobs. And you can't give them any jobs because you don't have any business.
Right, which goes back to sort of this whole idea. And I think that Giovanni, who said he used to run a huge business, you know, the idea that we've had all this productivity growth means that we can do a lot more with fewer people. But nobody, I'm a small business owner, I'm not going to hire more people unless I think I actually have the business to do it, to cover
Absolutely.
Their expenses.
Absolutely. You can't stay in business if you hire people and you don't have anything for them to do.
That's right.
But the debt, the government debt, how are they're $16 trillion in debt now. I mean, this is their, it's just going to go up another couple of $3 trillion.
Maybe. It depends. It depends how much they cut spending, right?
And then that's funded liabilities. And they're unfunded liabilities like Social Security and other programs. They're really in debt for something in the neighborhood of $100 to $110 trillion. How can they afford to continue to raise the money? The Fed is buying our debt. And they're printing money and printing money and printing money. You talk about the stock market being high. Germany is in a recession, but their stock market reached an all-time high.
Yes, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's not just going on here in this country.
That's
it's
right.
Going on all over the world.
And worldwide.
The real question that you're asking is a good one, which is, why do we keep pushing up the deficit? And I would say to you that buying our own debt when the cost of the debt is about 0.25% is actually the best thing we can do, right? Because what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for virtually no interest payback versus having somebody else buy the debt and we owe them interest on the money. So I don't actually have a problem with us buying our own debt if we can swing that. The bigger issue for me
is... But you're buying it with money that you don't have any backing, no value to it.
Well, I disagree with that point. What I'm trying to get at, though, which is interesting, I think, is that when you have an economy... Now, the deficit will take care of itself if we could get the economy going, right? Because tax revenue will come back into we've had a huge cut in tax revenue, right? So we've had less money coming in from taxes, which is what pays, you know, right? That's what helps for the government.
Why have we had a huge cut in tax revenue?
Right. So we've had a huge cut in tax revenue because people like you and people like me aren't making as much money, so we're not paying as much in taxes, right?
Well, my taxes just went up.
I'm sure they did, but overall, if you were doing better, you'd be paying more.
Well, that's because I'd be making more money.
Right. And I am sure, because this is how I feel about it, Jerry, that if you're making more money, you're happy to pay your fair share.
That's right.
Well, so am I. But when you're not making money, It's you pay less because you're paying less, right? So their taxes are down all the way because business is really down. And so what they're hoping is that by stimulating the economy, we're going to build everybody's businesses up and it's going to, you know, pay for itself. And then the deficit is going to fall dramatically, which I think it will once our economy gets going. The problem is our economy is not getting going. And so we're not really addressing the things that cause it. The deficit is just a temporary measure. And if you look back over the history of the U.S., like if you look back into, I think, the 1790s, right, that was a period of time where we also had a ridiculous runaway debt. If you look at, I think it's the 1840s and the 1860s, we have had other periods of time in our history where we have had huge deficits relative to the amount of money. And what's happened is within a 10-year period, which seems like a long time now, but over the span of 200 or 300 years is not that long. That comes back when the economy comes back, that goes down. And it will happen again. The problem is understanding where we are and how that is going to happen. And unfortunately, we live in an age now, it's not the 1790s, and it's not the 1840s, and it's not the 1860s. This is 2013, and we have media that can instantly publish all sorts of things, and so our level of knowledge is higher, our understanding is higher, and we can't just, nobody has enough trust to say, okay, government, you take care of this, and I'm going to go live my life. We all want to understand what's happening, and we're not getting those answers, and that is incredibly frustrating. It is for me. I know it is for you. But to go back to your original point, no, I don't think that the government is suing S&P for payback. At least if they are, boy, that would just be atrocious. So I'm going to hope that that is not the case. 404-872-0750. What a horrible idea. Richard joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Richard, what's going on with you?
Richard, Elise, thank you for your show. You do a great service.
Thank you. How can I help today?
I've got a mortgage that'll be, in 2 years, will be down enough where my taxable IRA will take care of it. And what I plan to do is pay half the first year and then half the second year to avoid the burden of the tax all in one sum.
Why are you going to do that?
Pardon?
Why will you use an IRA to pay off your mortgage when mortgage interest rates are like the lowest they are in history?
Because I'm so close to being paid off.
Okay, and so how much do you have left?
I have $70,000 left.
Okay, and how many years would it take you just paying it down on the regular?
10 years.
10 years. And are you retired?
I am.
So you just want the cash flow?
I do.
Do you have enough other money that if you pay it all off, you still have money to pay your expenses, travel, unexpected things that come up?
I do.
Okay. So what are you asking me for?
Well, I want to know if I'm going about it the right way.
Well, I already asked you the question because I think if you can borrow money for 10 years at 2%, which is basically what it would cost you to refinance that, and you still pay it off in 10 years, maybe you're paying, maybe the cost, the monthly cost drops by half, so you increase your cash flow, but you're not using up all your IRA money. So I don't know, maybe that's a better way to go.
But I'm 72, Elise, is another factor into this.
Well, age discrimination is not permitted at the moment, so you could be 72, 82, 92, or 102, and that's not supposed to matter.
Okay.
The question really is, what are you trying to do?
Cash flow.
You're trying to do cash flow. So what is your monthly mortgage payment?
I pay $1,200. My monthly mortgage payment is $900.
Okay. So if you could cut your monthly mortgage payment from $900 to $400 and have an extra $500 in your pocket, is that meaningful?
It is.
So I would say to you what you should think about doing, since you have 10 years left on the loan, you would only want to get a 10-year loan. 10-year loans are going for around 2%. My guess is that you could probably cut your mortgage payment for a 10-year loan to about $450 a month, save $400 or $500 a month, get the cash flow relief you're looking for without using up your IRA and without paying all that money in taxes.
I like that idea, but let me ask you this. With being retired with no income except Social Security, am I liable to get a loan?
Social Security is a qualified income that you can use to qualify for mortgages. So, yes, it's, and guess what? It's money you're going to get for the rest of your life.
True.
So they can, as long as that will cover the payments according to the ratios, you have lots and lots of cash. And if you needed to, you could even buy it down to, you could use a little bit of your IRA money to buy it down to a $50,000 loan.
True.
So I think you should investigate it. It could be that once you investigate it, you're going to go, you know what, this isn't such a good idea because of X, Y, and Z. But it gives you another option, because what I'd hate for you to do is liquidate this IRA. Even on $35,000, you're going to pay a huge chunk in taxes.
Yeah.
So I would just rather save you that money until you absolutely need it. And then, of course, once it's in your house, it's like hard to tap again because of the way the mortgage market works. So, Richard, I don't want you to, until that's the last resort. I want to see you get to a place where you can make it happen and have the cash flow that you need without putting everything on the line and locking it down into paying off this house. So now it's in equity, and now if you want to get any out, you're going to have to sell the house. So go investigate and let me know what happens. 404-872-0750. We've got a prize pack to give away when we get back. We're going to go back to the economy. Lots of people want to talk about S&P, Standard & Poor's, credit rating agencies. Who knew this was going to be such a font for conversation? I'm so glad. I'm Elise Glink. We're rebuilding America one house at a time here on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. We're going to do our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack, the value $145. It includes a four-pack of tickets to the North Atlanta Home Show February 15th to the 17th at the Gwinnett Center, a four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Gladiators on February 16th at the Gwinnett Arena, and a $25 gift certificate to the Lakewood 400 Antique Market February 15th to the 17th incoming. Great package of stuff. We'll give it to the fifth caller. Call 404-741-0750. Be nice to Crystal. She's taking your calls today, and good luck. 26 minutes past the hour, we're talking about the economy and ratings agencies and what's happening. Carl joins us on the line, also from Cumming. Hey, welcome to the program. What do you think?
Hey, Elise, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I retired early from a 35-year career 3 years ago to focus on my own business, which I've also been running for many, many years. And I started thinking, you know, I'm going to have to get a lot smarter about how to manage my investments, primarily coming from 401ks and IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
And when all this thing with the housing bubble broke, I read a book called The Big Short.
Oh, that's a great book.
Written by a gentleman named Michael Lewis, I believe.
Yep.
And I read it after listening to an interview with him on NPR one afternoon. And I said, oh, my God. I said, this is a real mess. So anyway, it's not, as you probably know, it's not an easy read. In fact, I've read it more than once. But it was one of the best things I've ever done in my life, because if you read that book and then you continue to listen to people like yourself and Wes Moss and my broker at Schwab and blah, 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 you really learn very quickly that you have to do your own homework, because, back in those days, they were selling these credit default swaps based on contracts written by people that couldn't even interpret what they wrote.
Well, wait a second. I mean, think about what our own former Fed chair said, Alan Greenspan. He didn't really understand them.
I know.
If the Fed chair says he doesn't understand, even though he did hit irrational exuberance at slightly the wrong time.
Right.
I mean, really? How can anybody understand them?
But I heard you talking about it when you opened your show, and then I had to go to a brief meeting. But anybody that's out there that is willing to learn and read some difficult books, it's amazing what you'll learn, especially by reading that book, even though now that's, of course, like you say, it's something that's going to take probably 15 to 20 years to correct. But the way that was put together by everybody that was out looking to make a buck or $1 million, I mean, it was a house of cards, and it was going to happen. It's just that when it did happen, I'm not even sure anybody knew what happened right away.
No, but look what happened. I mean, your point is so well made, Carl, because look what happened in the Great Depression. I mean, the Great Depression was technically over. The second wave of it hit in 1937. And it wasn't until we were through World War II and then beyond that we really started to recover from it. And we're so used to having a commercial every 8 minutes that our attention spans are way too short for a financial crisis of this magnitude. These are the aftershocks, folks. These are the aftershocks of a massive earthquake that hit the worldwide financial system. And we are not out of it yet. And we are about to have another aftershock. And that part is just beginning. Even as I think we've hit bottom and we're working our way out of it, the aftershocks continue. 404-872-0750. Carl, thank you for your call. We're going to take a short break. News, weather, and traffic, always very important. Rebuilding America one house at a time on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:36 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. I want to start with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. Don't forget to go to the Equifax Finance blog. I'll tweet out some links in that just a little bit. But it's blog.equifax.com, or just go to equifax.com and click on the link that says Finance Blog, where we have all kinds of great free information for taxes particularly, and tax season is upon us. What a mess tax season is. We're gonna try and figure out this week when we can have our tax experts back to do a live show so you can call in and actually ask your tax questions. There is just so much going on there. Really, really crazy tax season, I'm afraid. 404-872-0750. Bob joins us on the line. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Elise. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for your show.
Sure.
It's interesting and informative. When we talk about the economy, the thing that troubles me is I seriously doubt that most people understand what GDP even means. I really do. That we're really talking about the production of goods and services that people are willing to buy. And even if we do understand that, the government has so distorted the GDP by virtue of the support we give to basically fraudulent sorts of entities like the Medicare fraud, the Medicaid fraud, student loans that go to online universities where people build up this huge amount of debt, and they're going to get degrees that are useless and really absurd. And we keep doing this, and we keep pretending that we're actually about producing something that is really worth buying. And I would argue that the numbers, if you erased the fraud, the waste, the abuse, are far worse than we see right now. I think that, you know, your position that we're going to go into recession is obvious. It's inevitable. We just don't have the folks out there that are producing the things, that are doing the things that are worth them putting our money into. And that alarms me. We've so moved from the idea that you have a responsibility to take care of yourself first and foremost, and the government will step in to save you when you're facing something that's just irreversible and horrendous. What we have is a government that's enabling folks who are not productive, folks who don't want to be productive, and those of us who are putting the money out there for those programs are just seeing the money just wasted and thrown away. I think it's unreal to me that we don't recognize, you know, as a nation, that this money that we're spending on various programs is just perpetuating dependency.
Well, I have to say, I agree with some things you're saying, but I really disagree with the idea that Medicare is a fraud, Medicaid is a fraud.
No, not them. No, not them.
Well, you refer to them as Medicare fraud and Medicaid fraud. Do you mean just the fraud associated with it? Because
the fraud is exploding. The fraud, how you can take a program like Medicare and allow, I was reading an article the other day how the Russian mafia has set up all these clinics, these phony billing machines that are stealing billions of dollars from Medicare.
But look at what happened 5 years ago. The IRS didn't even recognize identity theft as a problem, and today it's a $100 billion problem.
Exactly.
And they're doing what they can to catch it, and but you're always going to be behind the scam artists, right? So what you have to do is focus on what I think is interesting about your call, which is this idea that we're not really measuring accurately true productivity in this country, true production services. And it's true that we are making fewer things in this country. We are. No question about it. We are making less than we used to. We're also becoming a service economy, and we are creating technological things that are spawning huge new industries like Apple. I mean, really, Steve Jobs was just a machine. A lot of his jobs are now in China, but a lot of them are here in this country, and more are coming back in. And so we have to focus on what we're really good on in this country, which is innovation and design and higher level thinking, and really that we do have, for all of its faults, the best higher education system in the world. Online universities as a side project, think about the free online courses you can now take from Yale, Stanford, Harvard, MIT, that allow people around the world and in this country access to some of the smartest thinkers and teachers anywhere, and you can take online courses and take the tests and do all the other things and educate yourself. So we are doing so many things right. But you're right. There are pieces of this economy that are inaccurately measured and pieces of this economy that just simply are not helping. And that is going to be a problem going forward, because we're not going to have the luxury of making those missteps without causing a huge dive in either productivity or employment or just the GDP, to your point, where it starts. 42 minutes past the hour. Bob, thank you so much for your call. We've had such great callers today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's continue on with our calls today. Mary joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Mary, what are you thinking about?
Yes, ma'am. I have $37,000 left on my home loan, which is about 7 years left on the loan. And I want to see and take advantage of some of the really good percentages. I'm at 4.5 now. I'm wondering if it would be smart for me to do the 3.0 with no closing costs and try to cut it down and maybe make it a 15-year loan or a 20-year loan.
You have 7 years left.
Yes,
$37,000. Are you employed?
Not at the moment.
Mary, there's nothing you can do. And even if you were employed, I'm not sure I would really recommend that you do anything. And the reason is, first of all, I'm not sure you could find a lender who would lend you $37,000. It's not worth the time. So most lenders cut it off at like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. You want to take a loan that you have 7 years left on and add 7 years to it and pay seven more years' worth of interest? Why would you even bother doing that? The problem is probably that you can't afford your loan right now.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to give you money when you don't have a loan. But what you might do, and I say that, I'm not trying to be mean, but if you don't have a job, there's almost nothing anybody can do for you. Do you have any income whatsoever coming in?
Yeah, I do have unemployment, and I do have, you know, some cash savings that if I had to put it into the bank or the credit union, which I'm with now, I had the credit union offer me the 3% thing with no closing costs.
You had a credit union offer you 3% with no closing costs and no job?
Yeah.
I don't know how they're doing that. Maybe they're going to keep that loan on the books. If somebody will offer you today, truly, 3% with no closing costs, without having a job, and that's actually going to save you some money every month, go ahead and do that.
Around $300. I just didn't know, you know, it's a credit union, and I tried to do the NACA thing, and that didn't work out for me.
No, I don't know what the credit union is thinking unless there might be something weird about that loan. That makes me worried for you.
Okay.
Because is that loan, they're offering you a 10-year or a 15-year?
She offered me 10-year at 550, taking it down from 7-something, or a 20-year, including taxes and insurance, for $350, 20
years. $37,000. Is she doing a home equity loan?
I don't think so, because I have about, you know, $70,000 worth of equity in the house.
And she knows you're unemployed.
I did tell her I was unemployed, but I do, like I said, I do have money that I can put into a savings account in that credit union that will help me out.
Well, maybe they just want the deposits. But no, seriously, I mean, they'll do anything for deposits these days, but it, you understand why that loan just sounds really wrong, right?
Yeah, it sounded fishy.
They can't resell that loan, so they either they think that if you put $37,000 in, what they're going to do is tie it, and the minute you miss a loan payment, they're going to grab the whole $37,000 that you put in there, which would be awful. But my feeling is that why would you even do this? 4.5% is a really good interest rate. If you have 7 years left, you could probably just pay off the loan or come close to paying off the loan. So use some of that cash every month to make that payment while you get a job.
Okay.
I worry about, I feel like maybe this is really the way they've laid it out for you. And if she wants to put it in writing and you can really close on this loan and you can cut that loan payment, yeah, go ahead and do it. But a 20-year loan, I mean, you would just, as soon as you got a job, you'd want to go back to paying it off on 7 years.
That's what I...
Mary? Oh, we lost Mary. That's what you were thinking. I bet that's what you were thinking. So you were thinking that the minute you would sign this up, lower the payment, and the minute you got a job, you would continue making the payments as you were making them before and get this whole thing paid off and save some money. If you can get them to do that, that's a good deal. I just worry that it's a bait and switch. So she's telling you what you want to hear so that you deposit the money and then they're not going to give you the loan. And then they're banking on the fact that you're just going to be too lazy to move your cash out again. And maybe they're not going to offer you anything on your money. Who cares? Nobody's getting anything anyway on their cash. But they have to really put it in writing and they have to get it going so that you know exactly what you have. And then if they're willing to do it and if you can really get that close, yeah, take that deal. I just worry there's something there that you're missing. Really worried. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can get another quick call in. Tanir joins us on the line. Welcome to the program. Tanwee, are you with us?
Hi, yeah. Hello, this is Tanwee Khan from New Jersey, Westfield here.
Hi, well, how can I help you today?
Hi, ma'am. I have a quick question. We are in processes of buying a home, and everything goes clean. And end of the day, we figure it out that the title got some issues. And the issue is very clean from my attorney, but he's saying that the mortgage company paid off in 1999, but they did not do the proper documentation to the county. So they are saying that it will take at least 15 to 20 days to get the proper documentation. And he's suggesting that he can escrow $5,000, and then when the owner are from that part, they will clean that the county later, then we can be okay. But my concern is that how much risk is associated with that? Should I wait or should I move?
Okay, your question is so complicated, Tanwir.
Yeah.
What does your attorney say about it?
So my attorney was saying I can show you. It's a very it's this way. Like, see, I'm saying, so the attorney saying that the mortgage was paid off from, like he said, the from previous owner.
So this is just a paperwork issue?
Because paid in full stamp with no certification and nothing in closing.
So if you move now, where are you moving from? Did you sell your current home?
Yes, I'm renting, and I have to make a move because I gave a notice to my owner. So he said, you can close this house. That's not an issue because there is no problem because insurance company is also ready to go.
Yeah. So you want to know if you should move?
Yeah. Now, the question, I
can't really tell you that because I haven't seen the paperwork. But if your attorney's saying it's definitely going to happen, you're going to have to make an interim move.
Yeah.
I would say to you, I would go back to the seller and say to the seller, hey, seller, you are not delivering clean title. I have extra expenses on top of it. I want the money that it's going to cost me for this extra move because I can't move into your house. I mean, at the very least, you should be compensated for having to make this interim move because the seller isn't delivering clean title to you. That's what I think. But what do I know? I'm not there reading your documents. I don't know what the attorney is saying. This is one of those things where you have to say, worst case scenario, I can't close on this house. Now I'm in temporary housing. Now what am I going to do? That's really the question that you have to answer. And you know, my feeling is if your attorney says, yeah, it's going to take a month, what if it takes 2 months? Well, the seller has to be willing, because the seller's the one obligated to deliver clean title. The seller's got to be willing to kick in something here. That's the conversation you need to have tomorrow morning with your attorney. All right, I'm Elise Glink. We're rebuilding America, one house at a time. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB. It's 57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, where we're rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. I've just tweeted out a couple of classic questions that I answered this week on the Equifax Finance blog, including, should I prepay my mortgage or invest the proceeds, the difference? That is, honestly, if I have to think about 15 years worth of questions on the show, that question I get more than almost any other. So I have tweeted out the answer there, so you can find it, @Glink. I said earlier in the show that mortgage premiums for FHA loans are slated to rise. So on January 30th, this week, the U.S. Department of Housing and HUD, Department of Housing Housing Administration, Department of Housing Administration, Housing and Urban Development. I don't know where I'm getting this stuff today. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which runs FHA, said that they were going to raise the annual mortgage insurance premium on most loans with a case number starting April 1st or later, which basically means if you are buying a house in the next couple of weeks, basically you'll get in under the deadline, but up until April 1st. The premium will increase by a tenth of a percentage point, or about $100 each year for $100,000 of loan. For loans greater than $625,000, that would not apply to anybody in Atlanta, but would in San Francisco, New York, and some other places. It'll be a 50 years for every $100,000 of premium. I'm going to tweet out a link to the story for that from Newsday. We'll be following up again about it next week. In the meantime, don't forget to follow me on Twitter. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Go to my Facebook page. Sign up there. Find a way to access all this amazing information in the ThinkLink.com community. All right, everybody, the music's playing. That means the show is over, at least for this week. I'll be back next week with more great information. In the meantime, have a great week.